The Functional Nerds podcast is brought to you by MapHook, a location-based social network available for free at maphook.com and as a free iPhone app. Find it, do it, share it, get hooked. MapHook.com. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Functional Nerds. It's that time of the week when the little phone starts lighting up, the red phone, and I walk over to the bust of Stevie Ray Vaughan and I pull back his head, push the button, the bookcases slide apart, I see the pole, I slide down into the super secret lair of the Functional Nerds, and I call John.
Hello, I am John Anilio. I write songs about science fiction, fantasy, and other nerdy things. You can get lots of my music for pay what you want, including free, over at johnanilio.com. I love saying that. including my new live version of the Summer Glau song, so you can go and get that for free as well. By the time you hear this, I think I might have a new video up as well, performance of my Rachel Rosen song, so you can go to my johnanilio.com and check out the videos page there and check out that. And yes, that's what is going on for me. Now, Patrick, when you say the bust of Steve Ray Vaughan on Batman, was it a bust of Beethoven that they would
push? It was, I believe it was, yes.
That was very good, Patrick. I like how you... clever.
Yeah, I thought that, you know, hey, I got to go to my strengths, and my strengths are the blues, so...
Mm. I like that very much. Very good. Very good. Well, this week, this week on the show, we are going to run an interview that I did with J.C. Hutchins at Balticon. So this interview is going back a little bit because Balticon was Memorial Day weekend, and I recorded a bunch of interviews that weekend. And the way the schedule played out, it took us this long to get to the J.C. Hutchins one. And J.C. was awesome. I hung out with him a little bit during the week. We had a real good time. Murr was hanging out a little bit with us. Murr Lafferty, I should say. You know, as opposed to all the other Murrs that are out there.
Yeah, I know. You're running into just such a problem there, John.
I know.
Looking for all the Murrs in the world, John.
Yes exactly. But J.C. and I talked about a bunch of different things, and I haven't really listened to the interview since then, so I don't remember them all. But we did talk a lot about transmedia, which is something that J.C. is working with right now, sort of, you know, telling stories through different mediums, whether that's through the printed book, ebooks, music, video, all sorts of things. J.C.'s had quite a few successful projects. He's a big online following. We talked a lot about that. We talked about sort of free content versus paid content and, you know, sort of the problems and issues that we're dealing with as content creators now. So J.C. was just a really interesting thinker and has a lot to say. So I think people that are regulars of our podcast are really going to dig a lot of what he has to say about this stuff, because I think we talked about issues that a lot of people, creative folks, a lot of issues that creative folks are going to find important. So hope you enjoy the interview.
And that's totally not what I thought transmedia meant.
Well, this is John, and I'm sitting down with J.C. Hutchins, and we are at Balticon. J.C. Is probably most well known for the Seventh Son series of books that he put out. J.C. is a pioneer in podcasting his fiction as well. Well, J.C., first say hi.
Hey, John, how are you?
I'm fine. I didn't tell you this yet, but I will tell you where I first became aware of your work, and it'll probably be funny for you. When podcasting started, as you know more than anybody else, or as much as anybody else at least, you know, I think the idea of podcasting, when I had first heard of it, not so much as wanting to do a podcast, but just, oh, wait a minute, you can listen to what you want and when you want. Yep. And to me, that was so appealing. That was just, oh, great. Because as much as I love listening, the invention of the iPod was, I think it people talk about it a lot, but to someone like me, it's just a massive impact, because I was always such a voracious consumer of music. My wife always made fun of me because I would literally be driving down the street and I would take 10 CDs with me. She's like, you're gonna listen to one song. And I was always like, yeah, but I'm not gonna know which one it is until I'm in the car.
No, I get it.
You know,
so
to me, like, having an iPod where you can have so much music on it was so appealing. And so when I thought about getting it, because they're not cheap iPods, and they weren't then either, I remember reading it and doing research, and this whole idea of, we were just talking before the interview about bang for your buck. So I wanted to justify buying an iPod. And when I sort of learned about podcasts, I'm like, oh, that's awesome. Like, the idea of podcasts was a big selling point for me getting an iPod to begin mm-hmm. with. Mm-hmm. Because as much as I love music, sometimes I would listen to talk radio a lot too. Mm-hmm. Even like sports radio. And it's funny, I'm not so into sports anymore, but if you're doing music all day long or if you're listening to music a lot, sometimes you just want to hear people talk. Mm-hmm. So the fact that podcasts would now exist where it would be on any subject and you could find whatever you were interested in, it was very appealing. And a lot of the first podcasts were technology podcasts, mm-hmm. obviously, because people who knew the gear were probably the first people to do it. Right. So one of the first podcasts that I listened to was the MacCast.
Oh, Adam with, Christensen.
Yes. Yeah, right on. And so he would, you know, and he still does that podcast to this day, I believe. And
oh, yeah, I'm still a listener.
Yeah. So he would, what I liked about his show is he would often have like a band at the end. He would play a song. And then you were a guest on it. I don't know how long ago this is now, but that was my first, because I remember thinking, because you came on, and you talked about how you were podcasting the Seventh Son novels right. and you built up this big audience for your work doing right. that. And I remember thinking, besides the fact that the story was very interesting of building the audience, I just thought, yes, that makes sense. Of course you would do this with a novel. You would do your own audiobook for, why not? Right. You know, being a musician, I'm like, the gear is there yep. and it's not prohibitively expensive anymore. Of course. Right. Of course this makes sense. So to me, that was my first sort of exposure to you and your work was on the Mac. Man, that must have been at least 5 years ago.
Yeah, and you know what? That was like the biggest... Well, I mean, and I was a super fan. I was listening to podcasts. It sounds like our stories about like how we were introduced to podcasting are very similar because I... Like this was like you were right. Like buying an iPod, there was a time when it was an event, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. And you were like saving your money, and I yeah. remember I was like ripping CDs to sell the CDs to help fund mm-hmm. the purchase of the iPod. And I don't know, maybe it was like a week before or a week after I got that iPod. I read some story in the New York Times about what else can you do with your iPod other than listen to music? And
yeah,
they mentioned podcasting. And the MacCast was either the first or the second podcast that I listened to. And I haven't stopped.
Right.
Yeah, but he, you know, Adam was really generous with his time and his interest, you know, being interested in what I did, being a Mac fan, which I am. But that was a huge get because I was reaching out to people who were just like me, who were tech savvy, whose brains were wired a certain way, you know, mm-hmm. being a Mac fan, if you're into that sort of thing. But like the emails and the listeners that I got from that appearance was really awesome.
Yeah. Right. So, you know, it's... It's kind of the whole idea of like all the early adopter stuff is that it wasn't that. And it's funny, I think, unfortunately, and I know people who do podcasts, a lot of people say this, it's, you know, I think it's getting to the point where it's becoming an understandable idea. But I still think, you know, you go to a lot of people on the street and ask yep. them what a podcast is. There's still a lot of people that totally. Really don't know what it is. It's getting more and more because now there are... so many podcasts and so many, for lack of a better way of putting it, so many like celebrity podcasts. Mm-hmm. Totally. And because I think now they've come around to, oh, this is a powerful way to interact with people.
And affordable, like unbelievably affordable way. Mm-hmm. I think that the biggest, and historically the biggest barrier for entry, I was just talking about this last night with another kind of like podcasting long timer, you know, we've been doing it, and while the barrier of entry is much lower than what it used to be, where, you know, iTunes, there was a time when iTunes was not the podcast, you know, place of choice to get your podcasting.
Yeah.
People had to build custom applications to, you know, aggregate this stuff, blah, blah, blah. But even now, even with, like, you know, the Adam Carollas mm-hmm. of the world doing podcasting, and even with it being on iTunes, which is huge... Mm-hmm. Because it is not as ubiquitous as flipping on a radio and turning a dial, yeah. that is, you know, in comparison to the barriers of entry for mainstream, you know, media consumption, it's still, sadly, still really high. And I was talking to my friend last night about, like, how do we lower it even further?
Yeah.
And I don't think we may not be able to.
Yeah, I don't know, because, you know, it's funny you mentioned Adam Carolla, because I'm a fan of his podcast, and I really like his show, and, you know, he's generally the most downloaded podcast these days. Mm-hmm. And it's funny how even my friends, now I'm in my mid-30s, and even my friends who like him and are tech savvy, you know, like, oh, do you listen to his podcast? He's like, I don't listen to podcasts. Yeah. I don't. And it's, you know, that's disappointing to me, and I try to be a bit, you know, evangelical about it. I'm like, but it's not that hard to do, and you'll like it so much.
Are you familiar with the This American Life iPhone app?
Okay. Well, not the app.
Right. Well, and I think that might be like the secret sauce. The problem with this is that you need the resources to develop an app.
Right.
And listeners at home, I'm really sorry that we're deep geeking on this, but it's so uncommon for us for folks to actually, you know, podcast creators to talk about this stuff in person. But, you know, This American Life has an iPhone/iPod Touch app. That, you know, you buy for a couple bucks, but it makes listening to their programming that they release as a podcast even very effortless.
Yeah.
In a way that requires less effort and less thought than doing it through iTunes or something. And I think that is probably the easiest way to get in the hands of or the ears of people, but you need resources to develop that application.
Right.
And so many of us indies don't have that.
Yeah. Right. Well, and I think, you know, it might also start to see a shift sort of generationally as well, where more people will do, because, you know, with a device like an iPod Touch or an iPad, I have a 5-year-old son, and, you know, you see, I was talking to this with the tech person that I work with. You know, I was telling him how, you know, touch screens, like, that's it, you know, because my son who's 5, I don't have to explain anything to him. He gets it. I put my finger there and I move it there. So with things like iPod touches and iPads and tablets, and you're just going to see more and more of that, I think, as these, you know, younger generations sort of have that and have, you know, sort of, you know, because we're almost there now, but where you have just constant access to the internet, no matter where, I mean, we're getting there. Something like a podcast will make more and more sense. And whether it's through an app or through something like iTunes, I think it'll be, a younger generation will always have it. Even our generation now, we're getting sort of spoiled. It's like, I want to listen to only what I want to listen to, or I want to consume whatever media when I want. I want what I want when I want it.
At no cost to me. But we won't go. We don't have to go there.
Well,
but yeah.
Just a quick aside with that. I don't know if I was telling you about this, but I was telling somebody at the con about this, and I was saying how, you know, if you read iTunes app reviews. Don't already, don't do this, but if you want to just have fun for a moment, if you read, especially the ones for games, you'll see this comment quite frequently: it's a good game, but it should be free.
Yeah,
like, you get that. And I don't know, you know, that's a whole nother conversation about, you know, sort of paying for things and not paying for perceived value.
Yeah, but one, but this, I want my nine. I've become incensed when I read, I want my 99 cents back. And while I know that 99 cents has like kind of like a psychological cachet with us, you know, and $5.99 has a psychological cachet with us and all this stuff, one of the things that I've been doing as an independent creator recently is kind of wrestling with the, like, assigning value to my work. Because I'm no longer in the, or as, I'm not championing the give it away for free model as much as I used to, for some personal and professional reasons that have, you know, that I've experienced over the past few years. But if one is going to assign value to content, then what should it be? And do we let the market, you know, do we look at the market for that? And if the consumer, if we looked at the consumer for that, then we should be pricing stuff at 99 cents. But when you consider how much the minimum hourly wage of an employee in the United States is, which is $8 or something like the $7.50 or something, 99 cents is a pittance for them.
Yeah.
Okay. And people are bitching, like these upper middle class people are complaining about wanting their 99. I mean, it's,
I know it's
insane. Yeah. And so when you kind of break it down, and I know that, but I'm certain that we're veering far from your intended topic.
Oh, that's okay.
And I'm sorry about that. But this has just been on my mind, is that when you actually break down, like, you separate the psychological connection to 99 cents with the actual effort is required to generate that money to pay for that application.
Yeah.
A less than an hour of your time, probably 10 minutes of a minimum wage, you know, worker's time. Please be quiet.
Yeah.
Please understand. Right.
Well, I think you were talking about sort of being adults. I think I have a couple thoughts about it in terms of kids versus adults, because I have a tuner application on my iPod Touch that I was using last night, and I use it to I teach elementary school music, and I use it to tune up, you know, the kids that play flute and the kids. So, you know, so I'm doing it, and the dial is going, and the kids are like, "That's so cool, oh my God." And I'm like, "Yeah, it's a great tuner." And they're like, "How much is that?" You know, because they all buy. I'm like, it's only $3.99. $3.99? Because they're used to getting free stuff, only free stuff. Yeah. And I'm like, and I sat down, and I was somewhat indignant, and I'm like, the cheapest hardware tuner you can get is about $20, and that's for a crappy one. If you want a decent tuner, it's like $50. This is $4, and it's great. Go and spend $4 on it. You know? Right. Because whoever developed this app, this is not a fly-by-night app. That's this right. is a okay. company. Maybe it's two guys in a company. I don't know. No. But it's guys that put some serious effort into developing this thing. Go spend $3.99. That is nothing for what this does. You know,
right.
so
right.
you know,
value
so,
versus I know I
and you know I've you know I'm just as a consumer, not even of digital content, but just as a consumer who goes and spends money places. I am of the opinion: do your research, get and you can do your bang for the buck thing. You don't necessarily need to get the top of the line stuff, but you know when you go cheap, you don't really go cheap because it bites you later and it doesn't work the way you want it to, or it breaks down quickly. Devo Spice and I were talking about this last night with, you know, to talk about Macintosh stuff. He has an iBook that's about 10 years old that he's using right now.
Yeah.
And he was talking about his dad, who's a PC guy, who'll buy, you know, like a cheap PC. And nothing against, but there's great PCs too. So I don't mean to like get into a whole Mac PC debate.
Right, right.
But the point that he was making is, he's like, my dad can't get over the price differential between a Mac and a PC. You know, he doesn't want to spend $1,500 or $2,000 on a Mac. He's always lured by the $600 PC that he can get. He's like, but I have my iBook that is now 10 years old that I spent $2,000 on 10 years ago. My dad buys a new PC every 18 months.
Yeah.
So are you really saving money? Are you to me, I feel like get the good thing and it lasts. Mm-hmm. And you actually, if you want to be sort of financially, if you want to be cheap, spend more to begin
with. Yeah, no, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's some logic to that. But anyway, what I do want to talk about is to be sort of somewhat abrupt about it, because I know our time is somewhat limited. I really do want to talk about transmedia. And you wrote a great blog post about that about a month ago. Mm-hmm. And it's something that's been on my mind quite a bit lately. I don't think I was calling it transmedia, but this idea of storytelling or doing sort of anything in different media, in doing it in you know, whether it's in print media or video or audio or what have you. I was talking quite a bit about this with Peter Arulian, who's got a book out through Tor called The Unremembered. Mm-hmm. We were talking about this because he's a musician too. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And he works for Microsoft. He works for Xbox. And so he's a guy that's sort of perfectly positioned in this because Tor is publishing him. He works for Microsoft and he's a musician. He does music. So he's someone that, and I think he used the term transmedia as well in the interview that we did with him. So maybe you can explain what transmedia is, what your sort of definition of transmedia is, and what you're doing with it now.
Yeah, well, it's a buzzword that, like, people who are kind of studying storytelling, you know, are may be encountering, but we don't know if they're encountering like a proper use of it. It's the word is in flux because a community of creators are struggling to define what it is. It is that new and that emerging. I have my personal and professional experience with transmedia storytelling is essentially telling a cohesive narrative, but distributing that narrative through multiple media that requires the effort. And it doesn't have to be a lot of effort, but it requires the effort of the consumer, the audience, you, the reader, or whomever, to seek out to experience these multiple facets of the story through these multiple media. So for instance, I wrote a book with a guy named Jordan Wiseman a couple of years ago called Personal Effects Dark Art. Now this is what typically, you know, when you buy a print novel, and for the sake of this conversation, I'm going to call that a flat book, meaning mm-hmm. it is just like from page one to page 300, that's the story, beginning, middle, and end, right? Well, Jordan is an influential kind of pioneer in the transmedia storytelling kind of movement. He's been doing it for more than a decade. He and I sat down and we conceived a story that began and much of it began and took place and concluded in the pages of that book, that hardcover book that you would buy. But there would be portals, narrative cues, and item, meaning like clues in the book, you know, and items that came with the book, like photographs and fake ID cards and credit cards and business cards and faxes and, you know, military awards and all a whole list of stuff that actually came with the book, tangible items that felt old or maybe even perhaps smelled old, that sort of thing, aged stuff. We included that with the book and presented this to the reader, and as the reader read the story, could become an active kind of investigator along with the hero in solving the mystery that was at the beating heart of the book. And to do that, that required them to go to websites that were mentioned in the book, or, you know, hack into email addresses that were in the book, or call numbers and get into voicemail messages that were mentioned in the book. And what this does, it's a very different way of telling stories, and it's very new. And because of that, you know, I think consumers are kind of, particularly book readers, mm-hmm. have historically kind of resisted going beyond the book to experience the narrative, but this is that kind of captures the spirit of what transmedia storytelling is. It's like a story in which these moments of telling the story effectively beyond, for this instance, the book, is baked into the DNA of the narrative. Mm-hmm. Meaning, like, before you write a word, like, this has to be a part of your plan mm-hmm. in telling the story. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. And so, you know, and I have experimented with, you know, kind of using transmedia storytelling after the fact. You mentioned your musician friend. When the print version of the first novel in my Seventh Son trilogy was released in 2009, and it's a science fiction story, right, mm-hmm. about seven human clones, each with, like, a respective... They all look the same, mm-hmm. but they have very wildly different skill sets, mm-hmm. right? And one of them is a musician.
Yeah.
And so I got together with a musician friend and I hired him to mm-hmm. perform and release songs under the John Smith character's name.
Right.
Which, you know, curious people, you know, because there was a URL mentioned and, you know, people could visit this webpage mm-hmm. and there they can actually listen to the songs that were mentioned in mm-hmm. the pages of the book, you know, at, right. for free. You know,
right.
So that's kind of, you know, it's just a way of kind of bringing the story beyond a conventional storytelling medium such as books.
Yeah, and I think we're sort of at the beginning of that, and I really do see that. I hope it does anyway, but I really can see this becoming almost the norm of a project. Maybe we're a few years away from that, yeah. you know, or maybe it doesn't go that way. I don't know. But I know for me, you know, a couple things. One of the when I got sort of involved in this community a couple of years ago, my songs now are a little more humorous, a little more sort of in like a sort of a Jonathan Colton mode. But when I first started doing it a couple of years ago, I was essentially reading books that I liked and sort of writing songs inspired by the books. And that got the attention of a couple people, particularly Lou Anders, who's the editorial mm-hmm. director of Pyre, who he and I are pretty good friends these days. And he is very forward-thinking in this way.
Yes, he is.
And
yes, he, is.
He and I got to be friends. He really likes my music. And he he asked me to do some work for him where and Mike Resnick had a series of books through Pyre called the Starship books, and they were five books, and they were kind of shorter books. So one of the things that Lou did is in the first couple of books he had these appendices in the back of the book where one was sort of an essay on the history of this universe that Mike Resnick did. One was and then really creative things. One was really like sort of Starship schematics. they, and one of the books, they go to a planet that's sort of, or a space station that is a gambling thing, like Vegas in space. And they're playing a game, you know, some sort of game of chance, like roulette or something. He hired like a game designer to give the rules of the game.
That's brilliant.
And then, right. So, you know, what he asked me to do is like, can you write a song that sort of, because it's Wilson Cole is the name of the main character, and he's sort of like a folk hero in space. Mm-hmm. He's like, can you write a folk hero song? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, can you write the sheet music? I'm like, perfect. I'm like, I'm a big fan of like old folk music and sort of like those old Pete Seeger song books and sort of the history of your world. So that's what I was going for with that. And so in the fifth book of the series, the song that I wrote is in sheet music in there, and there's actual music. The music notes you can play, you can strum it, you can sing it. And then I recorded a version of it, which was on my site, but the link to it was in the book.
In the book.
That's in the book. Brilliant. So it was really great. And it was super fun for me. Right. And I'm thinking like, yeah, why not more of that?
Totally.
Because the whole reason I got into doing this in the first place was kind of through a lot of fantasy novels. A lot of fantasy novels are sort of set in this kind of medieval world. And there's a lot of music in them oftentimes.
Right.
Like Tolkien's a perfect example. Mm-hmm. There are songs, but there's not actual music written to them in the books. Well, why not? Nowadays, we have the ability where... why not have sheet music in the book? Why not have someone record it, put it online? So people like me who are very interested in music, it's like, I want to go and hear that now.
Right.
So I think there can be more of it. And I know for me, like, that's one of the things besides my own sort of, personal sort of career, because I know so many folks in publishing, and I at this point, like, I'm kind of out there, and I sort of throw it out there like, hey, let's do this. And Lou is someone who's very forward-thinking and wants to do it. And he and I are talking a lot about doing these sort of transmedia things. Like, why not have a, like a graphic novel? Why not have the... And I think people have played with this for a while now, but I think what you're talking about is where this is conceived from the beginning.
Yeah, and this is where kind of like there are like seem to be two factions of like defining transmedia. Mm-hmm. One of them kind of, let's say, we'll call them the Star Wars faction. Okay, and this is not a disparaging comment in any way, but Star Wars is a clear example of a film franchise that was then a series of endless media has been kind of built around it. And it's all canonical, and it all enhances and informs the universe and even the events that are in the movies, right? Like there's a lot, like the now you know that the Star Wars, the stormtrooper who hit his head on the bulkhead as he was walking into the star, you know, into the room of the Death Star, he has a story now.
Right.
You know, they hired somebody to write that story. But that was all done kind of after the fact.
Right.
Right. And I kind of hail because of my deep appreciation for what we did with personal effects dark art. And it is highly complicated. Mm-hmm. It is like telling a story, but having to go through project management mindset to do it, right? Where you sit down and you don't just outline a story, but then you kind of build the roadmap for that story, and then say, okay, well, we'll need to hire. And this is where things get really interesting and very highly collaborative. Mm-hmm. Well, we don't have a skill set to make a short film, you know, but so we need to hire someone for that.
Right.
We don't have the means in-house to do graphic design or, you know, develop this website, this fake corporate website for the book. So we have to find someone to do that or, you know, hire or, you know, beg or borrow or whatever. And so what happens is that you begin to understand that, you know, that this is not just your story. It's a highly collaborative effort. You know, you're in a band now.
Yeah.
In a way.
Yeah.
And there are storytellers who are unwilling to do that, and that's okay. And there are audience members who are unwilling to do that, and that's okay. But you mentioned earlier in the conversation, how age, you know, it seems, and the curiosity of, you know, of your son and the curiosity of young people, and how touch, you know, touching that iPad is just part of their vocabulary. It's a learned skill for us, but not for them. It's just, you know, part of the natural curiosity of stuff.
Yeah.
And so I'm inclined to think that while telling stories to grown-ups using these transmedia, you know, approaches is a really good idea because you can tell complicated stories that way.
Right.
I suspect that we will have the most success telling these stories through like books as applications, as iPad applications that are geared towards younger people.
Yeah, you know? It's funny you mentioned that because between my son and between working with kids, I get to see sort of this generation coming up firsthand. Yeah. And I read, I'm trying to think of the name of the book now. I think it's the same guy. Oh, Clay. I think it was Clay Shirky's last book. I don't know.
Here Comes Everybody.
Yeah. And, was the one? Did he write another one after? I think he has another one out after that. I think, or I might be confusing with somebody else. But I think it is Clay Shirky's recent. It's not Here Comes Everybody. It's the one that just came out maybe 6 months ago or so. And the takeaway that I had from that book was he talked about it, whether it was his daughter or one of his friend's daughter, who was like 3 years old or 4 years old, was watching TV, watching some show on TV. And she went up to the TV. Do you know this? I don't know
if
you know
this. No, but I can, I'm anticipating what you're going
to
say.
So she went up to the TV and she's looking around and she was looking behind the TV and you know, the adult in the room was like, you know, sweetheart, what are you doing? She was like, where's the mouse?
Oh, wow.
She wanted to interact
with... I thought she was going to... I anticipated that you say that she wanted to touch the
screen. You know, if this story was done a year later, it would probably right, be that because this is, you know, when this was published.
Yeah, and then
I get it. Same idea.
Totally.
She was like, all right, I'm seeing this. This is cool.
Yeah.
But what do I do with it?
And you know, and I think that, you know, the passivity of our generation and certainly the generations before us and the generations, you know, kind of at us, because we're, I presume we're both like around the same age, mid-30s, thereabouts. Yeah. You know, it's like we came up in a very analog world, you know, where it was just, you know, it was this stuff is presented to us.
Yes.
And there's very little, there was no opportunity to interact.
Yeah.
And there was no opportunity to give back in any way. Or, you know, and I think even choose your own adventure books, which create the illusion of interactivity and choice. It is still a finite number of choices that someone else defined and presented to the reader. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
Right, right. So it's the illusion of choice. But now we're like, we're poised on a place where technologically and programmatically, using, you know, touch and devices and ubiquitous Wi-Fi and 3G connections and whatnot to dynamically load data, you know, depending and get that physical interaction, that tactile interaction with the stories that we're experiencing. And I mean, it's like, it's the best time to be a storyteller, to be, and when I say storyteller, I mean musician, I mean visual graphic artist, I mean filmmaker, all of that stuff. I think that we're all going to have to learn to play nice together and collaborate.
Yeah.
It's the only way to execute, you know, these complicated multimedia-like stories.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you were talking about sort of the generational thing. I think now, for someone like yourself, it's, hopefully, but I think it's a great time to be doing it because, like you said, our generation or older, not as many people are on board with this idea. But I think everybody who's younger than us, this is just going to be the way it's going to be.
I agree.
So if you're getting on it now, I think it is kind of ahead of the curve a little bit. I mean, maybe 5 years from now, we'll be looking back and be like, boy, we were wrong about that. But I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it may be a slightly different form, as all this stuff is. You work it through and you work out the kinks and you figure out how it's going to work. But I think that is just expected. If a kid watches, you know, we were talking about like trying to interact with the TV, you know, if a kid likes a show on TV, well, then what else happens? Well, then you can easily go online and put in the SpongeBob games, and you can play these Flash games there, or you can, you know, get your, you know, Lunchbox, you know, and that's always been with media. So, but I think what you're talking about is kind of a sophistication of that idea of, like, go buy the Lunchbox. It's more than that, obviously.
Right, right.
It's... But that is what is expected now. It just in terms of, you know, if my son likes a show, it's like, well, yeah, well, now what? I want more of this.
More,
what,
more.
Yeah, what? I need more now.
Okay. Right.
So I think, you know, doing this sort of idea of transmedia is the way to do more of that. And unfortunately, I think we're running out of time. So JC, I'd love to talk more about this. Maybe we can get you on the show again, you know, a couple months down the line. To kind of wrap it up, why don't you let people know where they can find you online, your website, and all that kind
of thing. Sure. Well, if your listeners are interested in learning more about kind of what I've done in the past and what's on my mind now in terms of kind of like the future of publishing and where we're going with all this, they can visit my website, jchutchins.net.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. And then I'm assuming you have all your links to your Twitter.
All that stuff is there. Yeah.
Great. Well, very good. Well, JC, thanks for taking the time. And I wish it could be longer. We could have gone on for
a while. John, I'm honored. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jay.
Looking for interesting places near you? Find them with MapHook, a location-based social network available for free at maphook.com and as a free iPhone app in the iTunes Store. Find it, do it, share it, get hooked. MapHook.com.
And we're back. Well, I hope you enjoyed that interview with JC Hutchins. Go and check out all of his work online. Real exciting stuff coming from him. So I think you'll dig him if you're not already following him on the various social media sites. For me this week, once again, go to johnanilio.com. You can download my new song, the Summer Glow, the live version of that, as well as check out the new video I put up and lots of stuff there. And let's see, and, you know, go to functionalnerds.com. I'm sure we've got some cool stuff going there, some new reviews from Paul Weimer, because he is a machine. Even though he denies it, he is.
I told him, he said, I am not a machine, honestly. I said, that is exactly what a machine would say if they didn't want us to know they were a machine.
Exactly. So go check that out. And I know Andy's working on a post, so maybe by the time this runs, Andy's new Booze Nerd post will be up. And
Remy
is working on something. So lots of cool stuff. So go and check that as well. Patrick, what do you have coming down the pipe these days?
Well, that's a rather personal question. I'm quite regular. Thank you. Not quite what you had in mind when you asked that question, was it?
No, it was not. I did not really want to talk about your brand consumption, so there we go.
Try this cereal. It's number one. Yeah, number one. Yeah. same old. You know, I'm going to Worldcon. Mm-hmm. And I'm realizing that that's only like 15 days away now. As we're recording this, it's only 15 days away. Mm-hmm. And so now I'm going, what have I forgotten? You know, there's got to be something that I've forgotten because I'm trying to prep for this. I want to try to get some interviews done. I didn't tell you, I ordered a little recorder like you have.
Oh, cool. Good. Yeah. That will come in handy.
And a bigger disc for it.
Cool. What'd you get, the Zoom H2, or what did you end up
ordering? Exact one that you had. You sent me a link a long time ago, and I looked it up in my email, and I just went ahead and ordered it.
Cool. Yeah, it works. Push that record button twice, though.
And, you know, I saw that it does, you know, you can set it up in different ways, and it's got the 3D microphone and all that kind of good stuff. So hopefully I'll be able to get some decent interviews for the show. And like I said, I got an 8 gig...
Memory card for it.
Yeah. So that'll help a little bit.
Very good.
I got bookmarks for Functional Nerds. I'm going to take some bookmarks that say Functional Nerds on them and put them on a table somewhere. Mm. And then hopefully, you know, everybody will have Functional Nerds bookmarks everywhere for their ebooks, you know, for their e-readers. Cause that kind of sucks. You know, I read something, who was it? I can't remember who it was. It was on Twitter. It was an author, and he was joking about signing e-readers.
Yes, I remember seeing that, yeah.
So I thought that's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
What I want to see now is I think bookstores should start having bookshelves where you walk up and they've got the cover of the book on a piece of cardboard with a barcode on it. Mm-hmm. And then you can still, you know, you pick it up, you can see the book cover, you can flip it over, and you can read the blurbs. And if you want it, you take it up and they scan it and they deliver the ebook to you.
Cool.
I think that would be an awesome thing for bookstores to do.
Definitely.
Because it would still bring people into the bookstore. People could still have that browsing experience, right? I mean, you're browsing through the bookshelf, you're looking at all the little pictures, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then you buy your book. I think that'd be awesome.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. Very good. So, all right, everybody. Well, I think that's about it for this week. I hope you have a good week, and we'll see you next time.
ATFMP.com.
Oh, I'm sorry.
See the girl curled up in the cryo, not a stitch of clothing found inside. Malice tipped off, wondering about the doctor. I don't care, cause I'm feeling alright. See the tree branch lying on the cold deck. She picks it up, maybe thinks it's fun. Snap us back to now, see the world be true. Don't look now, but River's gotta go. Summer bow, she makes me feel fine. I can't shake her image from my mind. Summer bow, she makes me feel fine.